From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
I'm Elvis Mitchell. Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. An accountant from India turned Bollywood filmmaker was a real affinity for the shadows beneath the myth of women. So why don't you make a film about Shekhar Kapoor? Instead, I'm talking to him. With hopefully he'll discuss his new film, Elizabeth, the Golden Age, in addition to one of my favorites, The Bandit Queen, and of course, Elizabeth. Shekhar, first of all, thanks so much for being here.
It's an absolute pleasure. Absolute.
I've got to ask you about that, because between the Elizabeth films and The Bandit Queen, you have a real, I think, affinity for dealing with women and transitional periods in your films.
Well, there are two separate issues, dealing with women and transitional period. I like to deal with women basically because the genre of filmmaking, when it comes to dealing with men, and men that face obstacles within the genre of filmmaking are turned very, very masculine. It all becomes about conquest, fighting, fists, you know. Whereas when you deal with women that faced obstacles, it becomes naturally about the spirit that fights back. And that's what interests me more. It is about where does the body end, where does everything end, and where does the spirit start? When you're jogging, at one point I used to do this and test it out. Is I run till the body gives up, and then suddenly the spirit takes over. So that fascinates me, is where do we live? Do we live in the body or where do we live in the spirit? When you make films about men, it's always about the body and about conquest and the maleness of it, unless you make Buddha or Gandhi or Mandela. But with women, it becomes much more interesting and much more complex because the spirit fights back.
It's fascinating because you yourself were involved in the film about Mandela, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And I came off that film because I want to tell the story of Mandela from the point of view of somebody that lives in Soweto. And I think when you make films about he's not historical, but when you make films about iconic characters, it's not as much as about them as about what they represent. I've been part of a country that was colonized, but not part of a country in which the people were not even considered completely human by the conquerors. And that was something that I really needed to understand. How do you do that? How do you react in that? And to me, a film about Mandela, too, also is about a man that failed. Because he failed as a husband, he failed as a father, he failed as a son, he failed in almost every relationship that we as people hold dear. But then that becomes the price of being God. Somebody makes you God, you fail at everything else because you have to sacrifice it.
Well, see, this gets to something that you touch on in a number of your films, that elevation of a flesh and blood human being into myth.
Yes.
And the price of that is clearly something that fascinates you.
Yes, it does, because it's a constant battle in myself. It's a constant battle that even those that don't... When people say, who am I really? They're asking that question. Am I body? Am I spirit? Am I enclosed in mortal behavior, which is, you know, falling in love, being jealous, being all the emotions and both positive and negative that we go through? Or is there something else out there? Is there something that is what we call consciousness? Is there a spirit? What is the relationship of me and my spirit? What is the relationship between my spirit and consciousness and the universe and God, if you like? And that battle I'm fascinated by, because I think before I die, I'd like to know who I am, really. So it does, yes, it comes into almost everything that I do. And in Golden Age, that's the ultimate mythic battle. When I did Golden Age, if you want me to talk about it right now, it was fascinating that people talk about, it was about the rise of fundamentalism in Europe led by Philip II, who interpreted Catholicism in a very purist way. And so he had plunged Europe into a kind of religious war. And it was a pretty horrific war. And the one person that actually was trying to stand against him was Elizabeth, who was Protestant, but half her population was Catholic. But she wanted to embrace the idea of complexity, diversity. And therefore, she embraced the idea that even the Catholics could be diverse and have their own faiths as long as their actions were not against her. And so she embraced tolerance. However, it ultimately landed in the Battle of the Armada, and history books will tell you different. The English history books tell you that ultimately Drake was responsible for the defeat of the Spanish Armada. Spanish history books, probably if the Spanish one, would give you a different story. But effectively, it was the hand of God. Effectively, what defeated the Armada was a freak storm. And so I work backward from it. What would have happened if the Freak Start didn't come? You and I would be speaking in Spanish, because they would have sailed all the way up the Thames and taken over England. The British Empire would not exist. It was the hand of God, and it started to become very mythic to me, because it was about Elizabeth, who thought that she was now beyond normal human or female desires of being a mother, of falling into a nurturing relationship. And then when Walter Raleigh comes in, she realizes that she's not beyond it. She has all those feelings about it. And then she has to overcome all of that and go beyond it to fight what was a man of purity and become pure herself. And in that realm, it comes to be an operatic, mythic film of a battle between two people, and she calls upon the elements, and in fact, the elements support her.
It's the truth. My guest is director Shekhar Kapoor. We're talking about his new film, Elizabeth the Golden Age, the sequel to Elizabeth. In the first film, it's about someone going from losing her girlishness and becoming a myth. And in this case, it's about a myth who wants to step down and reclaim some of that girlishness.
Yes. Well, she had become a myth, and she'd become all-powerful. In the last film, also on a psychological level, the forces that stood against her were in her own court, in her own house, if you like, in her own palace. And she overcame that and became powerful in her court. This time she's very powerful in her court, but she faces two dangers. She thinks that she's over the problems of the heart, and then Walter Raleigh walks in. It's an interesting psychological study also, because in order to protect herself, she puts in forward one of her most beautiful ladies-in-waiting, with whom, psychologically, she has an elder-sister relationship, and almost says, you know, I know what he wants. I know he wants that physicality, which I can't give him. You give him the physicality, and I'll own the rest of him. And that's what she thinks is going to happen, forgetting that when mortal people get physically involved, it often leads to love, it leads to marriage, it leads to having children. And that's what happens. And then she suddenly realizes she's out of control. So it's a very interesting triangle of a queen, a lady-in-waiting, and a man that walks in that two women start to love.
Talk about the actors in that triangle, because we know you have Cate Blanchett returning as Elizabeth the First.
It was a particularly challenging role. Cate, of course, created an iconic interpretation of Elizabeth in the last film. And I said to her that the last film had a huge arc from a young girl to a woman now in power. Now we start from an absolute power to divine. How do you define divine? See, Cate has all the skills. Her skills are near perfect, but you don't become a Picasso. Picasso's skills are near perfect. Beyond that, it's who you are. It's your humaneness, your human being, your ability to tap into the beyond. So if you're a great violinist, your skills as a violinist are fantastic and absolutely honed. But beyond that, to create great music, you have to tap into the unknown, and that's what Cate is now currently able to do. She's totally honed her skills, and she couldn't have done this part if she hadn't been able to tap into the unknown and that part of her life that is probably represented by her, the fact that she's become a mother twice since then. Because, you know, a love from a mother or for a child is an unconditional love, but not, you can't define it. It's just completely unconditional.
Sure. Now, how did you end up casting your Walter Raleigh? And talk about that, the way he's portrayed, too, because there's a kind of purity here. He's not quite sort of the brigand and sort of rebel that we know of Walter Raleigh from history.
Yes. Well, I wanted a Walter Raleigh that was, of course, a pirate, of course, has exuding a kind of masculinity that would challenge any woman, as he did in court, women falling all over themselves over him. Yet, the Elizabeth that we're interpreting would be a lesser Elizabeth if that's all she found and that's all she went for. But Walter Raleigh was an intelligent man. He was a true Renaissance man. His masculinity was intensely intelligent. And the one word I would describe him was that he was free. He was free of dogma. He was free of masculinity, of himself. He represented to me in this film absolute freedom, and that's what excited Elizabeth most, because that's the one thing she couldn't have. She couldn't have the kind of freedom that he had, which is the freedom that a mortal can have by not fearing anything, by being able to do and not addicted to any one thing and going on a great adventures. But then, suddenly, what she found was there was another kind of freedom of the spirit that came after you leave any addiction to mortality. You leave the addiction to the body and ideas of motherhood and nurturing. And so they both had the freedom. And he provoked the freedom in her, but she found a larger, a much higher sense of freedom than he had. And that's why I had to have Clive Owen in that.
Because the way he moves into the room, you give him an entrance that basically puts him on the same scale as your main character.
Yes. It was important for me to do it on that level because it's where, you know, when we start a story, we always say, once upon a time there was this, and then one day. So when you're telling a story and when you really have a mythic thing, that was the then one day moment for me in telling the story. Once upon a time, there's a queen who was always powerful. She had this relationship with a lady in waiting, and she thought that she was over all of this and over this ideas of wanting to be a mother anymore. And then one day, and that was then one day, and therefore he had to be as iconic, as powerful as the queen because the moment that he arrived, that the story starts.
It's The Treatment. I'm talking to director Shekhar Kapoor. His new film is a sequel to Elizabeth the Golden Age. For me, these films, I would include The Bandit Queen in this too, and to some extent even Four Feathers, is that they're very much films about that terrible distance between the heart and the head.
Yeah. I remember when I was doing Four Feathers, somebody asked me, what would you like to do, what would the marketing line be? And of course, ultimately, we were all in opposite camps about what the film should be about. But I would have said that true courage is not the ability to face death. True courage is the ability to face life, you know. And when you face life, it is that particular battle between the heart and the mind and the spirit and the mind. I'm quite obsessed with that. I'm quite obsessed with the ideas that the mind in itself is the great trickster, you know. Every time you try and trick the mind, it tricks you right back into enclosing you, entrapping you into things and giving you the illusion of control, that you're actually in control of tomorrow, you're actually in control. And then most of us, when we find that we are not in control, that's the big, big depression that comes up. That's the big letdown because the mind says you can control tomorrow. Actually, you're not in control of tomorrow. Mind is a great trickster. So, and the heart, actually, if you release the heart, it becomes of the spirit. You release the heart, it becomes of the spirit. And then you start to live the moment. The moment becomes much more important. So that's a big battle for me in my own self.
Well, it's so present in these films, and it fascinates me to think about that because I can't think of any other filmmaker who deals with such big canvases, who uses that kind of battle between emotion and intellect and the toll that one can take on the other.
Yeah, I think that's part of my coming up in the East. You know, there's a thing in the East that there's a philosophy that you are far more powerful in the search of your destiny. Whereas in the West, there is another philosophy which says your own will can overcome the destinies. Now, fundamentally, these are our mythologies. And the Eastern mythologies are what permeate my films a lot, the sense of the myth. And I sometimes feel that in the West, we lose a sense of our myth, and we only find them if we are dealing with science fiction or history. In our contemporary lives, we are unable to see ourselves as mythic creatures and events that happen in our lives as mythic events. Whereas in India, people call it melodramatic or China, but we see everything as a mythic event. I'm born, it's mythic. I die, it's mythic. You know, I fall in love, that's mythic. I get betrayed, it's mythic. I have a child, it's mythic. So it's an essential underlying sense of mythology that permeates our storytelling and our interpretations of our own lives.
We're going to take a break. My guest is director Shekhar Kapoor. His new film is Elizabeth the Golden Age. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at kcrw.com. My guest is director Shekhar Kapoor. His new film, of course, is Elizabeth the Golden Age. We're talking about his entire work. And you deal enormously with physical pain, characters' endurance and
yes,
the ability to endure pain. And that, I think, too, is more – that comes more from – I think you're grounding in the East than a Western thing.
Yeah. I think that why I deal with the enduring of pain is because the pain belongs to the body, and emotional pain also belongs in a way to mortal behavior. And I'm fascinated by what happens when you pass that moment of enduring pain, because that's really when the spirit starts. Beyond that pain actually lay the discovery of absolute wisdom, wisdom being in love, the ability to give. Without wisdom, all you want is to take. And then as you find wisdom in everything, you are willing to give because you have another source, which is the source of the spirit, which is universal. But the source of the body and the emotion and the mind is just the source of the self. And then there's not that much to give.
There is, and to some extent, a kind of death of the self in many of these films, isn't there?
Yes. Certainly Golden Age is about the death of the self. And it's a beautiful moment because at one point, when you see in the film where Elizabeth realizes that Bass and Raleigh have got married and that they have a child, there's a moment where she just plunges into the depths of mortal behavior. And I've even shot it like she's in the well of mortal behavior. And after that, Kate and I had a long chat and said, beyond this now, having gone to the depths, she has to bring herself out. And certainly in this, when she comes out, there's a scene of the camera circulating around her, and Elizabeth says, I forgive him. Raleigh is forgiven, but as I beg to be forgiven too for my behavior. And that's a moment when she starts to rise. So yes, it is the death of the self and the movement into the realm of the spirit, the movement into the realm of consciousness and your own sense of, and your own mythology, if you like.
It's the truth. My guest is director Shekhar Kapoor. His new film is Elizabeth, The Golden Age. Why is for you, and it tends to be the second act of your films, but it bleeds into the final act as well. Why is dramatizing chaos so key to what you do? Because as you mentioned this, it's obviously crucial to you in terms of the way that you dramatize, you work out a film.
Also, the way the camera moves, the film starts to become a little chaotic in terms of the character movements, the way the camera interprets the characters, the way the characters behave. It's because I believe that in order to go into this realm that I'm talking about, which is of the spirit or of the consciousness, of the universality, where your true self emerges and your true courage emerges in that, you have to destroy structure. Because what stops you from getting there is structure. But before you get into harmony with the spirit, you have to put your structured lives into chaos. So once you go through that chaos, and then you panic a little bit, and your sense of structure starts to drop, and you realize there are no more platforms of structure, that these platforms of structure were all illusory, and they were the very structures that supported your mind of that time, at that time, were the structures that were preventing you from recognizing your true, your universal, your divine self. Because Golden Age is a lot about the achievement of divinity. And so then the final act comes only after. You come into harmony only when you first use the chaos to destroy the structure.
But see, as you talk about this, I think about how questioning the purview of heroism seems to be to you. I mean, that there is no absolute in those terms. So often in historical films, there is someone who represents a heroism, and there may be an ostensible hero in the films that you make, but there's certainly a question about what that heroism is and whether heroism as a concept even makes sense.
Which brings me back to exactly the first question you asked me, is why do I like making films about women? Because when heroism is seen in the context of pure masculinity, it's less interesting. You know, it's just about violence and giving up your life. That's easy. That's easy. And that's why I deal more in a cinema with female characters, because their heroism is a complex heroism. It is doused with a lot of feminism, and that allows us to explore the spirit a bit more.
It's also, too, and definitely in the case of these women that you make these movies about them having to prove themselves, because they basically are proving their own kind of ability to dominate when they're being constantly questioned about it.
Yes, but that's been true about women, and they've always been dominated. There's an acceptance that power belongs to the realm of men, and the only way women can become powerful is the acceptance that it's a realm of men, and therefore we ought to become more male. But when you look at really, really women, like, that's why Elizabeth was such a fascinating character, because she never, ever became male. She did say at one point, I have the heart of a man, but That was just a speech. She never became male. She never married a man. She never asked for the support of a man. In reality, actually spurned any kind of allusion to being married because she realized that that would, you know, that would compel her to become weaker. That's why we are so fascinated by Elizabeth. I'm so fascinated by her. Also remember that she created an empire without conquest, at least in her lifetime. The British Empire started conquering after her, but she nurtured an empire and she kept an empire safe, but there was no conquering in her life. So the male aspect was missing, and it's that she nurtured the whole empire with a female spirit.
I'm so fascinated by the way that this fearlessness of using melodrama, which is certainly, as you were saying, a kind of a perquisite of Eastern culture, because here we tend to look down on it. But that fearlessness also gives you a chance to sort of use melodrama as a way to sort of explore some humor in this too. We should talk about the fact that there is humor in the film as well.
Of course there is.
In all your films.
Yes. There's no film without – I mean, there's no art without humor. There's no painting without humor. There's no tragedy without humor. Because one emotion is much more prevalent in contradiction, because the whole universe exists in contradiction. You know, music exists in conflicting notes. And between the conflicting notes, you find the harmony. And so to look for the harmony of a film and the harmony of even tragedy or heroism, you have to counteract it with something that is almost not comic, but lighthearted. And therefore, the contradiction works much better. That's why I really like humor. And in terms of melodrama, I don't call it melodrama. I call it mythology. It's an interpretation. My actors never act melodramatic. They act real. They act in real time. And I counter that real timeness of actors. And I never even allow them to get melodramatic.
You're listening to The Treatment. I'm talking to director Shekhar Kapoor. His new film, the sequel to Elizabeth, is Elizabeth, The Golden Age. In all these films that you've done, and all the ones that you've made, at some point, your protagonist has to accept that he or she has become legend. It's not actually ever absolutely stated, but there's this acceptance that they've become something other.
Yes. They've become mythic, iconic, beyond themselves. Beyond themselves. Iconic and mythic. That's what I would say. That's what they become. And because once you've crossed in the realm of the spirit, you're immortal. You know, you're immortal. You've crossed into immortality within your own life. Let's look at Diana. You know, Diana's a very interesting case in point. She crossed into, people worshipped her even in her own life. And she became divine in her own life. She crossed over. Gandhi crossed over. Mandela crossed over. These people cross over into, within their own lives, cross over into something that is quite immortal, and we worship them.
That tends to, I think, be more of a tenet of Eastern storytelling rather than Western storytelling, that self-awareness that we're talking about.
I lived with this since from the time I was a child. We are taught history in the context of the mythology of history. Our history is in terms of moral stories, moralities, complex moralities even, but still moralities, and in terms of mythologies, the conflict of different moral stands is how we understand history so that we can interpret that history into our lives. When I used to study history in my university as part of the little subject, I hated it. I hated the idea of having to restrict myself to dates.
Do you feel limited by facts? Because in your films, factual history is kind of immaterial to you, because you seem to be more interested, I would think, in the emotional truth.
I'm interested in two things, the emotional truth and also the interpretation of that history and facts as how they relate to our modern-day lives. And if the emotional truth and the facts were not in any way relevant to our modern-day lives, there would be no reason to make the film. There's no reason. It's only interesting if it's relevant because, you know, societies that don't learn from history, don't learn moral lessons from history, are bound to fail again and repeat the same mistakes again and again. And then, other than that, it's an art. Art is not about drawing perfect lines. Art is about interpreting what you see. The greatest art is an interpretation. And quite honestly, history is an interpretation also. Elizabeth was one of the greatest spin doctors of all time. I'm sure that the speeches she gave that we read now are speeches she carefully scrutinized. And she decided what would be her legacy. She decided that's what they would say in history. It was very interesting. I have a scene in there where when I asked people what was really famous about Walter Raleigh, they said, oh, he's like the chivalrous man. He put the cloak down. And when I went to shoot the scene, I couldn't handle it because I thought, wait a minute. Nobody knows this man. She's as well protected as even the President of the United States is protected. Try putting a cloak down in front of the President of the United States. You'll be dead. Now, she was just as well protected. How could any man actually go put the cloak down? So what you're wondering is that history or is that myth? Is it a fairy tale or was it a reality? So everything is a possibility. Everything is a possible myth or is a possible historical fact. But I'm fascinated. You know, after I finished Golden Age, the moment I finished it, somebody sent me a script of the Mary of Scots. And the history is completely different when you tell it from the Mary's point of view. Completely different.
I guess it would be, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Elizabeth is a big, big vamp. Mary is this noble, romantic figure that was completely usurped by Elizabeth.
But you kind of make Mary a romantic figure, too. And again, custodian of her own myth.
Yes. It was really important for me. You know, I had to tell you when I was shooting the execution scene, I was obsessing about the execution scene. And I talked to Samantha about it, too. It was really famous.
Samantha Morton, who plays Mary, yes.
Yes. Samantha and I talked about it. I said, Samantha, look, what's famous about her execution is that the axeman, the executioner had to hit her three times before her neck came apart. And the first time she didn't die, the second time she didn't die, and the third time he hit her again, and the axe came down and the neck finally separated from the body. I could have taken that interpretation. Yet, for me, because this film is about Elizabeth having to become completely divine, I said to her, let's use this as the moment this flitty woman that is constantly conspiratorial, conspiring every time, flirting, suddenly when she realizes she's going to die, becomes completely divine. So we saw the execution block not as an execution, but the block as an altar in which she was going to go and get married to God and be completely divine. So we were dealing with the same things that we're talking about. And intercut with that is Elizabeth in a mortal way, restlessness, uncertain, in doubt, completely, you know, inflicting upon herself all kinds of guilt about what was going on. And that's mortal behavior. And yet, at that point, Mary knew exactly what she was doing. And she was completely, almost angelic as she went to her death. The fact is the same. Yes, she was executed. But our interpretation is different.
I hate to end on that note, but we're out of time. I have to thank you so much for doing this, Shekhar.
Thank you. Thank you, Liz. Been a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. My guest is director Shekhar Kapoor. His new film is a sequel to Elizabeth, the Golden Age. Our technical director at KCRW in Santa Monica is Mario Diaz, with assistance from Paul Ruiz at the Argo Network in New York. Bob Carlson is the editor, Gemma Dempsey the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.